Support comes from Nicholson, McNamara & Associates, Merrill Lynch Wealth Advisors, dedicated to helping clients define financial goals and develop customized wealth management strategies. Information at 1-800-362-1368. And from Accuride Corporation, a supplier of components to the North American commercial vehicle industry. With global headquarters in Evansville and a steel wheel plant in Henderson, Accuride is proud to be red and blue, too. More information at AccuridCorp.com. And from Jackson Kelly PLLC. Jackson Kelly provides a full range of legal services, including corporate planning, litigation, environmental and real estate law to clients in the Indiana, Illinois, and Kentucky region and beyond. Client focus, national reputation, industry insight. Learn more at JacksonKelly.com. Additional production support provided by Michael Kaufman. From the banks of the Ohio in Evansville, Indiana, this is Red Blue Hoops with fanatical red host Ben Shoulders and obsessive blue host Evan Beck.
Good evening, Hoops fans, and welcome to Red Blue Hoops. My name is Ben Shoulders, past president of the IU Alumni Association of Greater Evansville, and your voice this entire hoop season for IU men's basketball. Joining me, a man known in Evansville as Beck the Wreck, but in Lexington, the Big Cat,
that's right,
Mr. Evan Beck.
B-Dog, I know you're bouncing off the wall tonight. March Madness is going on. What do they call them? The Hurrying Hoosiers.
Well,
are playing the Northwestern Wildcats right now in the
right
Big
now.
Ten tournament.
That's
in
right.
Chicago. And Indiana's running them off the floor right
well,
now.
Well, they are. And it shows my commitment to the show, Evan, quite frankly.
Because
I'm here. I could be in Chicago. I could be in Bloomington. I could be at home on my couch. But I'm here spending time with Walker, Evan, Bree, Daniel, and the crew here at WNIN for Red Blue Hoops. That's how we do.
Well, I know you're excited about the current performance of your Hoosiers, but before I get into Kentucky's most recent game, I will make a comment about
sure.
the Big Ten tournament. I'm surprised by how many empty seats we're seeing on the telecast here. Where are the Hoosier fans tonight?
Well, I'm not there. I can't speak to that.
It's empty.
We'll just get into the season right now. This past Saturday, it was the second highest attendance this season for the home game against Michigan State. We also honored the seniors from 75, which was Steve Green and John Laskowski, who still to this day, Bob Knight, who coached the last undefeated team in 76, says the 75 team was deeper, more talented, and better than the 76 team. So we honored the 75 team, and it was a great day. It was not a great outcome, though. We lost by two, had a chance to win at the end, came back, and the ball didn't go our way. So we did lose by two to a very well-coached Michigan State team, and we shot a little bit better than they did, 46% to their 43.8. We hit nine threes. They hit seven, got out-rebounded by five. But really what hurt us, in addition to some calls not going our way at the end, was 14 turnovers. The 14 turnovers at home, that's inexcusable. Yogi led the way with 21, Blackman 17, Zizlov 17. Troy didn't play well at all, I didn't think. But I will say this, Evan. Before we get into a couple guests, Izzo praised, I'm talking praised Crean after the game, said their program would not be where it is today if it wasn't for Tom Crean. And for those folks
Crean
was his assistant in the late 90s up until 2000 when they won it all. Then he got the Marquette job. But that was interesting to hear. The article is out there, folks, for those of you who didn't hear it, but he really went on and on and on and basically spent the whole press conference talking about how great of a coach and an X's and O's guy even that Crean is. So that was not surprising, but it was surprising in the fact that an opposing coach after a win is right. talking about the losing coach and how great he is. So that being said, that's how we did.
Billy Diamond did the same thing today in the SEC tournament defending Anthony Grant down in Alabama. But anyway, Kentucky hosted Florida in Rupp Arena for the last game of the season and won by 17 points to finish the season undefeated, 31-0. I have to say it was a very unique atmosphere in Rupp Arena. It was a unique electricity in the air, a lot of anxiety, I think, by the fan base.
Uh-huh.
The players didn't show any. They played very, very well
right.
in the second half especially. One really cool part about the game, the ceremonial the person that does the Y spell in Kentucky was Adolph Rupp Jr. Herky Rupp did the Y.
Wow.
But anyway, Kentucky's undefeated. Let's go to our first guest.
Yep.
And our first guest tonight will be
Don Fisher, national award-winning broadcaster, done IU voice for 30 years. Here he is. Hey, Don, it's Ben Shoulders.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing to do this, Don. It's not often we have a national award-winning broadcaster on our show here on Red Blue Hoops. So thank you for taking time. I know you're heading out to Chicago. Is it today or tomorrow? I know it's real soon.
Yeah, we'll leave Wednesday. We play on Thursday.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So thanks for taking time. And I wanted to let you know that a couple weeks ago, Evan and I, just for fun here in a article we had, I did our all-time Kentucky and all-time IU team. So I wanted to get your approval on my first five IU, see what you thought. I had Isaiah, Alford, Calbert, May, and Benson. So I know that I don't even claim to know as much as you do about IU basketball. So I wanted to see what you thought on my five.
They're all good picks. There's a million more that you can make. So everything in that context is subjective, and I don't go there any more than I have to.
I'm sure. Well, you've and again, folks, it's not often we have a person of Don's stature on the line, the voice of IU football and basketball for many, many years. So thank you, Don, for contacting us here. You know, the all Big Ten teams are announced, I believe, later today. I think it's at 5 o'clock Central, 6 o'clock Eastern. I feel good that Yogi hopefully is the point guard on that team.
Well, I watched a little bit of the Big Ten post action yesterday on the Big Ten Network. Jimmy Jackson and Mike DeCourcy were on there with Dave Rebson, and they were talking about the all Big Ten teams and who those guys would select. And between the two of them, they selected all five guys that I was picking, and Yogi was certainly one of them. I think Jimmy Jackson said that Yogi Ferrell would be his fifth selection on that team, and I don't think there's much question that he'll probably be, if he's not on the media list, he'll certainly be on the coaches list as an all-Big Ten selection on the first team. I think it's well-deserved. I think he should get that selection. I don't think there's another guy in the Big Ten that's better than he is. And certainly, Yogi's had a terrific season. The sad part of it is he's not thinking about that right now because he's thinking about that free throw that he missed against Michigan State, and hopefully he puts that behind him. And he will, because he's had other disappointments in the past. But that said, he had such a terrific game against Michigan State on Saturday, and with 21 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, and joins Tom Coverdale, Damon Bailey, A.J. Guyton, and I'm forgetting somebody. There are four guys that were guys that had scored over 1,000 points, had over 3,000 assists and over 400 rebounds.
Wow.
And he joins that group of becoming the fifth player. So that's special in itself, and this kid's had a terrific career at this point, and he's got a year left. Hopefully he comes back and we get to see him play another season.
I hope so, too. And to accomplish that in 3 years, unlike some of those others,
right?
That's pretty darn impressive.
That is impressive.
Very much so.
Don, this is Evan Beck, and thank you again for your time with Red Blue Hoops on the show. And due to this show, it's caused me to watch a lot more Indiana basketball than I ever have historically, being a Kentucky fan. But I've really enjoyed it. And I've also tuned into your radio broadcast, because sometimes I'm away from the television, and I want to say you do a fantastic job covering the basketball team.
Much appreciated. Thank you, Evan. I appreciate it a lot.
Yes, sir.
That's something coming from a Kentucky guy.
I guess it is. But with that said, I was going to ask you, do you have any insight on how Yogi is doing physically? I noticed from my perspective watching the Iowa game, and I must say that I have not had the chance to watch the Michigan State tape yet. I'll do so tonight. But in the Iowa game, I was noticing that Yogi looked a little fatigued. I was surprised, coming off a 6-day layoff. I was going to see if you had any insight on how he's doing physically.
Well, I don't think there's any question he's tired. He's played. He's not the most. He doesn't have the most minutes in the Big Ten, but I think he's among the top four or five guys in minutes played in this league this year. And so he is again this season, like last year, he's one of those guys that's had to carry a heavy, heavy load. And last year he carried an even heavier one than this.
Yeah.
But he's played so many minutes. He's the one guy that Tom Crean feels he has to have on the floor most of the time. Just because of his basketball IQ, the fact that he runs the show for the most part. And there's no doubt that Yogi's got to be a little bit tired. I think he's banged up a little bit too. But here's the other thing about him. He's kind of like Antoine Randall-El back in the day. If you remember how many times he touched the football every single time and made some of the most incredible moves I've ever seen. And I think he missed only 3 minutes of a regular season game and maybe 5 minutes in total in his playing career because of injury. I think in the Michigan State game 1 year he had an injury late in that ball game, and then they went into overtime and he couldn't play. But I mean, Yogi is like that. He's an Iron Man out there, but at the same time, even Iron Men get tired now and then, and without doubt, I think that is playing on him, and I think Coach Crean is trying to give him as much rest as he possibly can.
Understood. That's awesome. Well, you know, Don, speaking of this year, and I checked this morning, and we're ranked, just to get a little, this is part of the show, getting a little banter going with UK fans, we're ranked 24th in schedule strength, and UK's 40th, so I just want to add that one, but separate from that, I did check, and you know we've had some as you know some big wins this year, and unlike last year, you know we had some big non-conference wins. I mean SMU at home, Butler on a neutral floor, which I hardly call that a neutral floor when it was about three blocks away from their gym, but
right,
you know that Pittsburgh and the ACC Big Ten Challenge, of course, and then some huge wins in conference. Maryland stayed as a top 10 team since we beat them, and Ohio State and at Illinois. So that all being said, definitely some great, great wins this year. I had a little disappointment the last couple weeks, but I missed the game Saturday. I tried to go to all of them, and we were in Louisville, so I couldn't make it. But I heard that the hall was rocking, and we honored the 75 seniors, which is really, really cool. But I just kind of want to get your thoughts on this year's team going into the Big Ten tournament and how what you think as far as the season review goes.
Well, when you look at what the expectations were at the beginning of this year, there's no question that up until January 22nd, which was the Maryland game at home in which Indiana dominated that performance, as everyone knows, and won it handily. Final score, I think, was I can't even remember now. 89-70 was the final score in that game, and Indiana dominated that contest.
Yeah.
But up to that point, Indiana had exceeded everyone's expectations.
Absolutely.
I don't think anybody thought that this team was going to be that good at that point in the season. And so you looked at it from that perspective. Then now you come back from that ball game, and your last 12 have been disappointing. They've won 4 of those ball games, lost 8 of them. They closed the regular season losing 3 straight at Northwestern, home to Iowa and Michigan State. There's no doubt that this team right now is on a slide, and they've slid downward. And I don't know if they can turn it around or not. Their problems are, number one, that they are still limited in size and physicality against most of the teams in the Big Ten. They are not mentally, because they're so young, mature enough yet to deal with some of the negatives that come along the way and the pressures and those kinds of things. And it's factoring into their play at this late point in the season. And obviously the Michigan State game, had they won it, would have given them a huge lift, I think, going into the Big Ten tournament. But now the pressure becomes even more paramount because, of course, all the bracketologists and all the people that talk about these kinds of things on talk radio and newspapers and that are talking about Indiana being very much on the bubble. And the bracketologists now have Indiana as a play-in game. And if they would get beat by Northwestern, who's not in the top 100 RPI in the first game of the Big Ten tournament, I would question whether Indiana gets in or not, because that will knock their RPI down below 60, I'm sure, because right now I think they're at the 55th or 56th spot on the RPI, someplace in there. Purdue and they are neck and neck, or right next to each other in the RPI. So Indiana can't afford to have a ball game here at the end, or, you know, in the Big Ten tournament, where they fall to somebody like a Wildcat team. And let's face it, Northwestern's just gotten better as the year has gone on. Mm-hmm. And they've gotten better at the end of the year, where Indiana has slid at the end of the year. So I find this, and here's the other aspect of it, of course, there's a lot of pressure on Tom Crean now, people wanting his head because this team, you know, has slid here at the end of the season. I just think there's a lot of unfairness in fans' fickleness, how they go about perceiving things, because when this team was as high as a kite, tied for first place in the Big Ten on January 22nd, and had just beaten Maryland, they were all giving this team all kinds of credit. Of course, when they lose, it's Tom Crean who gets all the credit for losing.
You're exactly right.
It's troublesome. It really is. And you could have your likes and dislikes with the coach or the coaching staff, but at the same time, let's face it, it's the kids who play the game. And they're the ones who are supposed to be out there trying to get the job done, and they are. But the problem is right now everybody wants to place all the heat on Crean, and I think that puts pressure on the players as well, because they're playing for their coach. If they weren't playing for him, you know, you'd see a whole different attitude on the floor with these guys. These guys are playing hard. They're giving it their best shot. They're just not quite getting it done right now. And the sad part of it is it comes at the end of a year in which Indiana had, for the most part, exceeded all expectations.
That's a great review.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
thanks,
well,
Fish.
Very well said. You know, Don, with the interview with you, we have an opportunity to put together one of our best shows of the season, because I've had the opportunity to get Mike Pratt, UK's color guy for the radio broadcast, to be on the show this week as well, and it should be exciting. And I was going to ask, what are your thoughts on the Kentucky season so far?
Well, there's no question that this, going into the year, was the best team in the country. There's no question about that, and they've proved it as they've gone through. I don't see anybody that's even close to them in the talent aspect of it. Now, they have had ball games where they haven't played their best basketball. But as I told my wife, she came in, I don't know, a couple of ball games ago, and she said, "Hey, Kentucky's getting beat." And I says, "Well, how much time's left in the game?" And she said, "Well, I think it's 7 or 8 minutes." I said, "They'll win by 10," and they won by like 12. So, you know, they're just a ball club that I think that if there is a failing of them, is that they don't put teams away that they're capable of putting away early on. And it may come to haunt them here in the tournament, whether it's the SEC tournament or the postseason. That would be, to me, the only negative I've seen. They seem to play to the level of competition, and sometimes that can bite you.
No, you're spot on. Their stats actually backed that up. Their stats against ranked teams are better than the stats against the unranked teams. So your observation is spot on, Don.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and they're just there. When they play somebody that's supposed to be able to beat them, they clean up. I mean, they're that talented. They're one of the most talented basketball teams I think it's ever been put together, and you give Coach Calipari a lot of credit for that. And then on top of that, he does get them to play hard at the defensive end. I think oftentimes when you've got that much talent, everybody thinks that you ought to outscore everybody by 40 points and score 90 to 100 points every time you walk out on the floor. That's just not the way it is. And let's face it, when you're in the SEC or the Big Ten or the Pac-12 or whatever the case may be, those conferences all have good coaches, and those guys all know how to coach against you because they've played you before and they understand how you want to play. And so they try to take those things away. And in that context, I think without question, Kentucky has just done a fantastic job of keeping their poise, of making sure that they take care of their business, and they've done that the entire season.
Well said, Fish. A quick question. I know we can't get too in the weeds about recruiting, but on Saturday, and again, I apologize I couldn't make it Saturday, but certainly I watched it. I saw that Thon Maker, who has Kentucky on his short list as well, I believe he canceled the Kansas trip to come to Indiana as a visit, I mean, as well as Thomas Bryant were both there. Looked like they were having a good time, at least it appeared that way. And they're both the type of player I think that we would need for next year's roster. So I guess along those lines, as you spoke to earlier about needing some presence down low, do you think that – I know Colin Hartman was kind of banged up as well a couple games ago. Do you see either next year us getting a 7 foot or so large body down low, or Hartman, Perea, one of those stepping up and being a presence down low? Because I think if we have somebody down low solid and all the guard play comes back, we really could be formidable next year.
Well, there's no question about that, and they do need that big guy. They need somebody to come in there. And I'll be honest with you, I want both those guys.
Yeah, so I do
mean, I. There's no question that both of them would play. Obviously, they're young. They're inexperienced guys at the college level. But you know, coming in with those kinds of credentials that they do have, that both or one or the other could really help this basketball team. And there is no question that the biggest problem with this ball club they currently have is the size factor. Because let's face facts here, teams can play you totally differently defensively if you don't have a post player that's a real significant presence out there. And obviously, Hunter has done a nice job of improving, but he is still not that guy. And I hate to say that, but that's just the fact of life. And he may make major improvements for next season. But honestly, he's playing out of position because he's really a four.
Yeah.
He's not a five.
Exactly.
So you need that post presence inside, and it would make a dramatic difference to this basketball team, especially if everybody comes back, as we hope that they will. At least we're talking about the primary guys in this ball club at any rate. And let's face it, both Bryant and Maker would obviously make this team dramatically better. So and my hope is that both of them come, but if they get one of them, it's a heck of a lot better than not getting anybody at all, because Indiana is right now feeling the pain of not having a big man.
That's right. And, you know, and I think in the last two or three seasons, we've proven we can land a five-star big man with Vonleh and then Zeller the year before, 2 years before. So we have a solid track record of landing at least one five-star center, and hopefully we can land one of those two.
Well, here's your thinking process. If you're Thon Maker or you're Bryant, either one, would you not say, Lord have mercy, I'm going to play every minute?
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's exactly right.
If you're going to want playing time, boys, there is no a better place you could possibly come than Indiana University.
And not only that, on top of that, it's also bodes well, is obviously every major high school player wants to get to the NBA, and we've had three lottery picks the last two drafts as well. So it's kind of a win-win if you're one of those two or another five-star center that hasn't signed yet.
Well, that's the key. And both of those guys could come next year. Maybe one steps up to be better than the other at the outset. But the other guy knows that he's going to play too. And then the other thing about that is, if one of them is capable of going to the NBA, then the next guy is the next guy up for the next season. So, honestly, it's a win-win-win situation for any one of these guys that would come, or if both of them would come, it would be a tremendous tremendous asset to Indiana. And let's face it, Kentucky doesn't need another big man.
Oh, right. Sure we do, Don.
I agree with you there, Don, for sure. And Evan, you had a question.
Don, in regard to recruiting, I was going to ask your opinion about where the roster's headed next year. Right now you have 13 underclassmen. You have two signees from the state of Missouri and still recruiting, you know, the likes of Maker and Bryant. So, I mean, the way it sits now, there's not enough room. So where is someone going pro this year off this year's squad, or what's going to happen scholarship-wise next year?
Well, there's no question that's an issue. But here's the thing. It was an issue a year ago, and then you lose Luke Fisher in the middle of the year, and Noel Vonleh goes to the NBA right after the season ends, and you have two other guys transfer out. It became a whole new roster again this season. So
sure.
It's happened before, and that's why you oversign players. So, and it's not just Indiana that's doing it. There are lots of programs that are doing the exact same thing. Because you don't know what's going to happen at the end of the season. Is everybody happy? Somebody unhappy with their playing time? Is somebody going to go try to go pro? Troy Williams has been mentioned in that vein. And I don't – he's the one guy that I think that has no chance to go to the – I'm not saying he doesn't have a chance. He'll go to the NBA at some point
because
of his athleticism. But is he even close to being ready? No way.
Yeah,
he doesn't have a 15-foot jump shot that is consistent. And if you can't shoot the basketball in the NBA, what are you even doing there?
Right,
they're not going to give you a chance.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth, Don, because as we wrap up, and thank you so much for taking time with us, I did want to ask about Troy, because I'm kind of a college basketball nerd, if you will, and I check about every list there is every day. And one of the things I check on as we get closer to the end of the year is the draft board. And Troy has certainly fluctuated, but I think the most recent one, I thought I saw him a 29th, 30th, somewhere in there, late first round, certainly early second, if not. A lot of comparisons, putting on my IU hat, a lot of comparisons to his sophomore year in Victor Oladipo's. I know Troy's 3.5 inches taller, but I kind of see that similarity as far as athleticism, not quite having a jump shot as a sophomore, but certainly can take a game over, especially offensive rebound-wise. Do you see that comparison to be fair, or is that jumping the gun a little bit?
Well, I know what you're saying here, but here's my take on it. And Troy Williams is a phenomenal athlete. He is one of the most athletic guys, quickest jumpers, explosive jumpers that I've seen. And Vic was another one. But Victor did something on the basketball court that Troy Williams has yet to get under his basketball IQ, or not IQ. It's not really an IQ thing. It's more of a want-to. His defensive play.
Yeah.
You have
yeah.
got to play at the defensive end. They talk about the NBA and they don't play defense. That is a crock. I have watched the NBA for years now, and I'm telling you, all of those guys play at the defensive end. Maybe not as hard as you'd like them to play every single game, but they're playing an 82-game schedule.
Yeah.
These guys can play defense, and defense is in their DNA makeup. And that is something that is not in Troy's right now. And
right.
he has got to develop that. And he's got to develop an outside jump shot that's consistent. He can shoot it every now and then, but he's got to become consistent with it. And if he would learn to pull up from 10 to 15 feet and knock down that mid-range jump shot rather than driving to the hole when there's nothing there at times – he would be a phenomenal player, but that's something that he still has to learn. And that's why you stay in college that extra year or two. And in Troy's case, there's no way in my mind he's ready for the NBA. And I don't look at the draft boards or anything like that. But if I'm an NBA guy, there's no way I'm going to touch Troy Williams at this point.
Right.
Unless he's in the D League for 3 years or something like that, or to get him ready for the NBA from his athletic perspective. And there are a lot of guys who are great athletes playing basketball, but guys with a basketball IQ and the want to play at both ends of the court are huge in that department, and I think they're all going to go ahead of Troy Williams.
I'd certainly agree, and that's why you're a legend and I'm not, I think, among other reasons.
No, honestly, that's just common sense.
Well, that too. Yeah, you're right too. Sometimes, as Evan says, I don't have that, I think, sometimes. But, no, you're exactly right. But by the way, good luck today on your show with Dan Dockage. I know that's coming up here a little bit later. I'm going to try to listen to that. Is that at 12:30 Eastern?
Yeah, well, yeah, it is 12:30 Eastern. It fluctuates between 12:30 and 12:35, or if I forget to answer the phone call like I did with you guys the other night.
Well, unless Evan has anything else, we so appreciate this, Don. Again, thank you for taking time. This certainly made our day and will make our show this week. So I really appreciate the insight and taking time and attention on this. Thank you so much.
Guys, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Don. Have
thanks,
a great
Don.
Day.
You bet.
All right, folks, that was our pre-recorded interview with IU legend Don Fisher. We'll go to break and come back hopefully with Mike Pratt, UK Radio, Red Blue Hoops, 88.3.
Support comes from Jackson Kelly PLLC. Jackson Kelly provides a full range of legal services, including corporate planning, litigation, environmental and real estate law to clients in the Indiana, Illinois, and Kentucky region and beyond. Client focus, national reputation, industry insight. Learn more at jacksonkelly.com. And from Accuride Corporation, a supplier of components to the North American commercial vehicle industry. With global headquarters in Evansville and a steel wheel plant in Henderson, Accuride is proud to be red and blue, too. More information at AccuridCorp.com. And from Nicholson, McNamara & Associates, Merrill Lynch Wealth Advisors, dedicated to helping clients define financial goals and develop customized wealth management strategies. Information at 1-800-362-1368. And additional production support provided by Michael Kaufman.
Welcome back to Red Blue Hoops. 88.3, give us a call a little bit at 812-426-7400. March Madness is upon us. Indiana is currently up 38-22 over the Northwestern Wildcats. But at this point in time, we have a very special guest on the line. We have former All-American Mike Pratt. Mike?
Hey, guys. What's going on here tonight?
Well, we're having a good time here in the studio, Mike, watching the Big Ten Conference, and I assume you're on your way to Nashville. Is that correct?
I am, Evan. I'm headed down. I'm about 40 miles from Nashville.
Fantastic. Well, to our listeners, Mike Pratt, a former UK player, like I mentioned, All-American, played for the legend Adolph Rupp. He played from 67 to 1970. And, Mike, can you give us a little insight? What was it like playing for the legend Coach Rupp?
Well, it was special. It was we had a very good team and had a lot of success and won three straight SECs. And everybody who ever played there has got Coach Rupp's stories. You could go on and on with them, and many of them that happened 15 years apart sound about alike. And it was a lot of fun, Evan. Let me tell you, it was a lot of fun.
Well, I know that you're considered a legend at UK, and I sure hope that here pretty soon, Mike, your jersey's hanging in the Raptors Rep Arena.
Well, that would be nice. That would be nice. I don't think that would be a culmination of all the things that I've been fortunate to be around, but it would be really nice. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, I remember when Calipari was first hired, you pulled me aside, and you were a prophet. You told me, you said, Evan, in Calipari's third year, we'll hang a banner, and guess what? That's exactly what happened. So Tell me a little bit, Mike, what it was like. You were involved in the hiring of Coach John Calipari. Give us a little feedback on what that was like back in 2009.
Well, I got a call from one of his friends, who's also a friend of mine, that on Friday night after Billy Gillespie was relieved of his duties, and he told me without a question of a doubt that Calipari wanted the job. And I said, well, to this guy, I told him, that we can't miss. We've got to hit the guy right off the bat because of what had gone on. And he assured me and then put the phone down and called Calipari and called me back. And he says, I just got off the phone with Cal. And he said, that's correct. And here, you can call him. I said, no, I don't want to be talking to anybody right now, given this situation, but I'll take your word for it. This guy's was the director of player personnel in the NBA. And so we knew that he really wanted the job and we wanted him. And he was the guy that we went after and the only guy that we talked to. Now, a lot of agents and representatives were talked to, but he was the only guy that we talked to. And it was a done deal. Once we met with him, it was just a matter of working out the contract. It really was pretty easy from that regard.
Well, can you give us some insight? I think it was an infamous Sunday in Chicago where you guys met and finalized the deal.
Yep.
And I remember hearing some stories about Coach Calipari talking about rebranding Kentucky basketball.
He did. There was Lee Todd, president of the university, Mitch Barnhart, and Rob Mullins, who's now the AD at Oregon, and myself. And we sat in Calipari's suite. He had been up to see Derrick Rose play with the Bulls. So he basically did his presentation, a dog and pony, whatever you want to call it, that was as good as I had seen in a long time. And I've seen a bunch of them. For different things, but he hit on the branding piece and who he would recruit and who he would recruit against. And he understood branding. He understood the name Kentucky and he understood what it could be made into. And he did tell us that he was going to recruit against North Carolina, Kansas, Duke, UCLA, all the big brand names. That he said, you haven't been recruiting against them, but I'm going to do it, and we're going to get it done that way. And sure enough, majority of the players, Evan, that he signed, that's who he's beaten on. And the ones he's lost to those schools for more times than not.
Sure.
So he understood where he had to go to build his team, and that's why I felt very confident that good things were going to happen quickly because he was wired. I knew personally he was wired to the AAU groups, and I knew that the assistants that he was going to bring in were wired too. And that's all it took to come to the conclusion that, you know, things could get done pretty quickly.
Well, that's so true. As you and I both know, you know, UK recruiting had fallen on some pretty hard times there for several years, and Cal Perry got us back to the national level. Well, we are just finishing up a historic season, 31-0. It's been so fun to watch. It's been fun seeing you at the games, Mike. You do a great job with Tom Leach. Can you compare this year's Kentucky team to the 76 undefeated Hoosier team?
Well, I don't think it's fair to go outside of 10 years. I think when you compare teams, you stay in a 10-year window, players and teams, because things change so rapidly, particularly lately. You know, I think that team, what was their, did they play 30 games?
32-0.
32 games. And you go back from there to when I played, we only played 26, mm-hmm. and there were only 24 teams in the NCAA.
Wow.
So you really only had to win four games. But, I mean, we opened up 1 year with Notre Dame and 1 year with Marquette, both top 10 teams. And Jacksonville was a top five team when we played them. And, I mean, it was just a different world, so it's not fair to compare at all. I think this team is unique in that they are very unselfish. But more than anything, the pieces of the puzzle fit. I don't care whether it plays 1 or 12. The pieces fit, and that very seldom happens on a team. Usually you have guys that for whatever reason, maybe they don't fit in their opportunity when they get it to play because what they do doesn't mesh. But these guys, their talents mesh, the pieces of the puzzle fit, and they're willing to do that. And that's the amazing thing about it. It's a team that you can like because of the way they play.
Right. Hey, Mike, this is Ben here, and thank you so much for calling in, by the way. Obviously, on this show, I represent the IU side, but I certainly have respect for UK and the, everything that the program has done historically and even this year. You know, it's funny, though, how everything is 6 degrees of separation. I just realized when you said 70, and not to bring up a bad memory perhaps, but Jacksonville, who actually, I think, beat you guys in the Elite Eight. Is that right?
They did. They beat us. Yep.
The point guard on that team and the sixth man on that team went to my alma mater high school, and both from Evansville, Indiana, Vaughn Wedeking and Greg Nelson, who were two of my dad's best friends.
How about that? I know Greg. He lives in Dayton, Ohio.
That's right. I just talked to him the other day, and then Vaughn, of course, passed away in 09. But that's just that I, when you said 70 Kentucky, I thought about that, and it's just a crazy small world. So
yeah, it is, and I see A-Train quite often.
Artis Gilmore,
once a year, yeah. And then I used to run into Rex Morgan,
yeah.
And I haven't seen Rex in quite a few years.
Yeah, didn't he transfer?
He's an Indiana guy.
Yeah, University of Evansville. That's right. Wow, what a small. And the other one, I think Pembroke Burroughs, was that the other?
Yeah, I never ran into him after that Saturday when they beat us in the Elite Eight.
Right.
He didn't come around when Artis was a teammate of mine in the NBA. He didn't come around. But I mean. You know, I remember him, sure.
Right. The first team to have 2 7-footers, I believe. Right. So that's kind of wild. But
they were huge back then.
Yeah, huge. But, you know, Mike, I did want to ask, and taking off my IU hat and just putting on my college basketball fan/nerd hat, I wanted to ask you, I've always said that in recent memory, let's just call it the last 20 years, that I've always said that the 96 Kentucky team, as far as I've seen the last 20 years, is probably the best team I've seen in college basketball in the last 20. Do you see comparisons of this year's Kentucky team to that team? Do you, for that matter, depth-wise, size-wise, talent-wise?
Ben, I think there's some comparisons there. Again, I mean, you're comparing different eras, and I don't think that's fair to do that. I think 12 team was really talented.
Yeah.
And I think the only fair thing to do is compare 12 with this team when it's all said and done.
Sure.
I don't think it's fair to compare 96 to, and 96 was really, really talented team.
Sure.
There's no question about it, but I just think when you get outside a 10-year era, so much changes that you really can't do a fair comparison. But this team is different. This team is, a lot of people talk about all their talent, and they are talented, but that's not what beat you. What beat you, I think there's some guys that are not as good as some people think, but, again, they fit so well, and they're willing to sacrifice that it doesn't make any difference. And it's the first thing you always want to say is, boy, is that a talented team. But like that Indiana team in 76,
right. Sure.
They fit. They were willing to sacrifice. This team, if they get exposed in some areas, they overcome it because they play so well together, and they share, they pick up for each other, and
right.
That's what gets them over the hump.
Sure.
Well, Mike, as we're now into March Madness, you're going to beat me down to Nashville by about 12 hours, but I'll be down there with my blue on tomorrow, and I was wanting to know your perspective.
You
yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll be down there, absolutely. I want to hear your perspective on, do you think this current UK team will show us a gear or two different or a higher level of play going into March Madness?
I think they will. I think they what they experienced last year, guys, was pretty amazing. I mean, they lost their confidence. People beat them up after they didn't get a great start after all the 40-0 talk, and they popped back up, and then they would go down. And the month of February was just awful.
Yes,
it did a lot to their confidence, and all of a sudden they perked back up in the SEC tournament, and then they put the pedal to the metal. They hit some big shots. They got a little lucky, but that's what it takes. But I think these guys learn from that, and I do believe in their own way they have a grudge about not winning the national championship. And I think that's the whole focus that they have. I think they got a little bored with playing.
Yeah,
this year,
I saw that.
Time. And they want to make a run at this thing. And I think that, yeah, I think they'll have another gear. And I think they're going to need to win a couple close ones or at least one. That's part of the deal to win a championship. You've got to win those. I mean, if Wisconsin doesn't turn it over twice in the last minute and 30 seconds last year, they probably beat Connecticut, okay?
Yeah.
But they didn't have any luck. I mean, they were awfully good, and they didn't have any luck at that point. Kentucky had the luck, so that doesn't mean Kentucky won't this year. But you got to make a play or two that catch a little luck, that move through some games that maybe – you shouldn't win, or it's a toss-up game.
Well, one last question, Mike. What do you see in the growth of Andrew Harrison as a leader for this team?
It's been huge. It's been huge. His development, how comfortable he is. And, you know, he experienced a real rough year last year and took a lot of beating from the media and from fans and basketball fans, whatever, because the expectations were so high. And I think this year he feels real comfortable where he is, and he is he's running the show out there, guys, and he's doing a heck of a job. I mean, he is a top-of-the-line point guard in college basketball, and he runs the show, knows what to do, never gets frustrated at all. I mean, he's just having a terrific year.
I agree. This last month and a half, he has really shown me a lot, and looking forward to seeing how he carries his team into this tournament for a deep run. Mike, I can't tell you enough how much we at Red Blue Hoops appreciate your time tonight. Have a safe rest of your trip into Nashville, and I'll see you down there tomorrow, okay?
Thanks, Mike.
You got it, guys. See you, Evan.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, folks, that was Mike Pratt, color for UK Radio Network. We're going to go to break. Red Blue Hoops, give us a call, 812-426-7400. Phone lines are open.
Go.
Support comes from Accuride Corporation, a supplier of components to the North American commercial vehicle industry. With global headquarters in Evansville and a steel wheel plant in Henderson, Accuride is proud to be red and blue, too. More information at AccuridCorp.com. Support comes from Jackson Kelly PLLC. Jackson Kelly provides a full range of legal services, including corporate planning, litigation, environmental, and real estate law to clients in the Indiana, Illinois, and Kentucky region and beyond. Client focus, national reputation, industry insight. Learn more at JacksonKelly.com. And from Nicholson, McNamara, and Associates, Merrill Lynch Wealth Advisors, dedicated to helping clients define financial goals and develop customized wealth management strategies. Information at 1-800-362-1368. And additional production support provided by Michael Kaufman.
Welcome back to Red Blue Hoops. Ben, I have to say, I never imagined that I'd be sitting here on live radio interviewing legends like Mike Pratt and Don Fisher.
I can't believe it. It's pretty awesome show.
An ex-banker awesome and a current show. Banker and a bunch of basketball junkies. But that's I think right. We have a caller, our sexy voice from Kentucky, uh-oh. Geraldine.
Wow.
What's going on, Geraldine?
This is the real legend that you've been waiting for.
That's right, Geraldine.
I agree with that,
even better than Mallory's crackers.
Let's get it right, fellas.
What do you have for us tonight, Geraldine?
I was just going to say, I haven't been out today to check, but I would guarantee that I-65 South, motoring past Bowling Green today, has been loaded with blue and white and will be all day tomorrow.
No doubt.
And no doubt. And I just know what you think about the media circus that is the SEC and how you think these boys are going to navigate that circus. I know some of them did it last year, but it still has to add to the pressure that they're feeling in addition to the perfect record and everything else that's at stake. How do you think they're going to handle the media circus and what is actually Nashville becoming a big blue nation?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a great question. It's actually a topic of discussion during a business meeting I had earlier today. And I can tell you this, that leading up to the tournament.
I think we lost Geraldine. Did we lose Geraldine?
Leading up to the tournament.
Okay.
The Kentucky players, both the sophomores and Willie Cauley's a junior, but and also the four freshmen we have, they've done an excellent job talking to the media. I think they're staying in the moment, taking game by game. They're showing a lot of maturity. And Nashville, no question about it, when our team takes the floor tomorrow, it's a different kind of Kentucky crowd than what you see in Rupp Arena. It's a much higher level of energy because these are a lot of fans that never get a chance to see Kentucky in person. And from what I understand, they're expecting 50,000 Kentucky fans in Nashville. There's only 20,000 tickets available. So
yeah.
Broadway's going to be a madhouse. But, Geraldine, thank you so much for the call.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Let's give an update here from the Big Ten Conference tournament. Perea. We have Northwestern 36, Indiana 47. We have Hunter Mascara Perea on the floor, hurt.
He's on the floor. I am sweating a little bit.
I hate seeing injuries,
so do I.
But especially in March. Last year, Willie Cauley-Stein broke his foot against Louisville in the Sweet 16. And as we, you know, you hate to always have that asterisk or that wonderment of what would have happened if. But anyway, they're pulling Perea off the floor right now. Standing ovation. Everybody looks pretty. It looks like a pretty.
There's some really worried there, Hoosier fans there.
Speaking of the SEC tournament, there's been a couple of upsets. Bruce Pearl, the Auburn Tigers, they last night, as a 13 seed, they beat the 12th seed Mississippi State Bulldogs.
Yep.
Today, they beat the 5 seed Texas A&M Aggies.
Wow.
So now, Auburn has won two games in the SEC tournament for the second time in 30 years.
Wow.
And they will take on the 4 seed LSU Tigers tomorrow after Kentucky takes on the 8 seed Florida Gators, who beat Alabama this afternoon. So it'll be Kentucky's second time to play Florida in less than a week.
They just saw a bubble. Florida's in the bubble for NIT, so I think they secured it today.
Again,
I'm not saying that.
No.
Joke.
The thing about
they
Florida
really are,
is their
I think
defense.
In NIT now.
You know, last week in Rupp, Florida was staying within one possession up until about the 10-minute mark, and then all of a sudden Kentucky won by 17.
Right.
The one unique stat about that game, Kentucky wins by 17. They only shot 5 threes and made 2. So
right.
They're winning without jacking the ball up from the perimeter.
Without shooting threes, yeah.
So if Indiana were to win tonight, Ben, who would they take?
They'll take on 2-seeded Maryland, who we blew out at Assembly Hall, 89-70, and then we only lost by 2 at Maryland on a last second missed 3 by Yogi, who got his own rebound and threw it up and missed it again. So we played Maryland pretty darn well, blew them out at home, and only lost by 2 at Maryland. They're 9th in the country.
Yeah.
So I feel good about our matchup with Maryland. Now, granted, they put 2 people on the first and second team, all Big Ten, Des Wells and Mel Trimble. So, they definitely have a great team. Very well coached as well with Mark Turgeon, who congrats, by the way, winning Big Ten Coach of the Year by 1. Now, Bo Ryan won the other. Or did Bo Ryan? Well, actually, Bo Ryan won both, but Turgeon won the Sporting News. But that's what I meant.
Speaking of awards, Kentucky's been racking up this week. In fact, I don't know if you've been surprised. Willie Cauley-Stein is getting a lot of first-team All-American.
But he did. But what's interesting is Kentucky didn't have the SEC Player of the Year.
Bobby Portis from Arkansas. Yeah. They had all four freshmen on the freshman team.
Right.
They had two first-team players, two second-team players. They had Coach of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year in Cauley-Stein. I mean, they're racking up the awards. Deservedly so. I mean, I cannot say enough. This Kentucky team is the embodiment of teamwork. I mean, they have sacrificed a tremendous amount of minutes for the betterment of the team. They're fun to watch. I mean, even if you're a Kentucky hater, which I know you are, they are a great team and they're fun to watch.
I'm definitely not a fan, but sure. I'll say this. Well, Evan, this show has literally flown by as I watch the Hoosiers play right now. I'll say this. Thank you to Mike Pratt. Thank you to Don Fisher. Two unbelievable radio broadcasters. I mean, I can't say enough how much we thank you both for taking time today to be on Red Blue Hoops. On that note, Evan, next week, it's all about bracketology. It's all about March Madness, baby.
That's right. It'll be next Thursday night on regular time.
The first day of the dance.
That's right. And
well, officially it's dance. Actually, it's the third day, actually, but it's the first day that.
That's right. You have the play-in games.
Yeah.
But you know what also next Thursday has been? It's the eve of spring.
It's the eve of spring. That's why I have a pink tie on
the next day.
The eve of spring.
I'm looking forward to it. I love March. You know, today in Evansville, when you walked outside, it had the smell of March Madness. It reminds me of being in Atlanta.
It's kind of springy. Yeah. And thank you again to Mallory for the crackers. I made a good treat here in the booth.
Hey, Bree. What's your prediction?
Go Hoosiers while we wrap this up here. They're up 13.
Red Blue Hoops. See you next week.
88.3.
Red Blue Hoops is a production of WNIN Tri-State Public Media. The executive producer is Brad Kimmel. Steve Berger produces the show with help from Josh Wolski. The technical director is me, Brianna Williams. Thanks for listening.
Additional production support provided by Michael Kaufman. Support comes from Jackson Kelly PLLC. Jackson Kelly provides a full range of legal services, including corporate planning, litigation, environmental, and real estate law to clients in the Indiana, Illinois, and Kentucky region and beyond. Client focus, national reputation, industry insight. Learn more at jacksonkelly.com. And from Nicholson, McNamara, and Associates, Merrill Lynch Wealth Advisors. Dedicated to helping clients define financial goals and develop customized wealth management strategies. Information at 1-800-362-1368. And from Accuride Corporation, a supplier of components to the North American commercial vehicle industry. With global headquarters in Evansville and a steel wheel plant in Henderson, Accuride is proud to be red and blue too. More information at AccuridCorp.com. The opinions expressed in this show do not necessarily reflect the views of WNIN Tri-State Public Media, its board of directors or staff, or for that matter, Purdue fans, Evansville fans, or Notre Dame fans, Louisville fans, USI fans, certainly not Duke fans.